There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Coming up on NFL Live, the Kansas City Chiefs are holding their first Super Bowl parade in 50 years. It's already underway, and we are going there live in just a few. Meanwhile, the NFC champion 49ers are cleaning out the locker rooms today and speaking for the first time since their loss. We'll address their top priority this offseason. And with the NFL season coming to an end, watch out, everyone. The XFL season set to open this weekend. Commissioner Oliver Luck joins us to lay out what the exciting new league is going to look like on game day. Hello, everybody. Welcome into NFL Live. With us here today, we got Jeremy Fowler, Coach John Fox, and also throughout the show, Adam Schefter is going to be updating us with his news and notes and some great Super Bowl stories, I hear, Adam, that we haven't caught up on. So can't wait to hear that. Meantime, Patrick Mahomes, just about an hour ago, tweeted out, I'll go ahead and warn y'all, my voice is almost gone and I already don't have a lot. So he's certainly having fun out there in the parade. And the Super Bowl MVP is ready to celebrate. And boy, was it a sea of red out in Kansas City, downtown KC. Hundreds of thousands of people celebrating the Chiefs Super Bowl win today. As if the fans needed to add to anything else. It was cold, but we know those Chiefs fans, they are tough. Look at Mahomes just having a good time. Andy Reid's 21-year career and finally getting that Super Bowl championship. The parade will wind through about 2 miles of downtown KC and will wind up at Union Station. People started lining up at 4 a.m. this morning just to get that perfect seat. And I saw some video earlier, too. As soon as they opened up the area to let the crowd in, people were just jumping and running on all over each other. So you got to assume nobody's really working. But so while we're going to head out to the parade in just a few, we've got to start talking about Patrick Mahomes' future and how Kansas City is going to handle it. So I want to start with Adam. Yeah, Adam, how much is it actually going to cost Kansas City to extend Patrick Mahomes?
Well, Dinah, here's the simplest solution of all, and I'm very serious about this. Just hand him a blank check and tell him to fill in the numbers. Whatever he fills in, he's worth, and whatever he fills in, you hope he's not going to be overly greedy. But the two sides would like to get it together and get that deal done. Now, Clark Hunt, the Chiefs CEO, has said that his timeline is about 12 to 15 months. But the truth of the matter is, it's in everyone's best interest to do this deal sooner rather than later. And I'd be surprised if this deal were not done by the start of training camp. There's no use to waiting. Patrick Mahomes last season had the dislocated kneecap. He's not going to want to risk anything, even though the price on his contract will only go up over time. And if the Chiefs wait and there's a new collective bargaining agreement and the salary cap spikes, who knows what the price can be. So there's a way to get this done now that's probably in the best interest of both sides. But if I were the Chiefs, I would just say, Pat, here's the blank check. Fill in the numbers, whatever you think is fair. And there we go.
Yeah. And one thing Patrick Mahomes has made so clear, he loves Kansas City. He has really made that his home. He has said that he wants to be there. But is there any disadvantage, Coach, for him to maybe not wait a little bit longer and just take a deal now?
Well, I think, you know, really, I think it's in more of Kansas City's best interest to get it done early than it is in Patrick's. Because you've got some guys, you know, we got Tom Brady, you got Dak Prescott. There's some numbers out there that you know, you'd hate to go a little too low on the number. I mean, if I'm him, his family, and his agent, you know, you want to get the most you can. I think the longer the better for him.
Yeah, Jeremy, what do you think?
Well, I asked around some people, the execs in the league, to say, what is he worth? What should he be paid? Yeah. And they said, okay, Russell Wilson's the highest paid at $35 million. Let's go like $37 to $40 million a year is the range on like a five-year deal. You know, they would take that now, I think, if they could do it. Because if they wait, you know, the salary cap is probably going to go up like 7 or 8%, and then you're looking at an even bigger number. More quarterbacks came in to move that market up. And so I think they want to get something done. I think it will happen pretty soon.
Well, we know that Mahomes is due for this pretty significant raise, and they're going to have to cut some of that fat somewhere else. And we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, Tyrann Mathieu was named team MVP, not Patrick Mahomes, despite that he was named Super Bowl MVP. Coach, what does that say to you about who Tyrann Mathieu is in terms of the texture of this team that they picked him?
Let's not forget, they were, you know, really close to going to the game last year. You know, they lost that tough game in the championship game. And they needed to get better on defense. I mean, you look at what Andy Reid did, made a change at defensive coordinator, you know, brought in Coach Spags, and then players. And Tyrann Mathieu was that kind of guy. And if you, you know, in that locker room, he's got a lot of juice, and he brought a lot of swag to that defense, which was a big reason why they did win this game, you know, the Super Bowl, and got to the game this year was Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah, because, Coach, as you saw, they basically remade this defense. Oh, yeah. We're talking 7-8 new parts. They bring Frank Clark and pay him $20 million. Mathieu gets the huge money, and this is a guy who's just – he's emblematic of that change. He's fresh. He's got a great attitude. He can do 8 different things on one play. He'll go and cover the flat, help with the double team, and then go make the tackle on the quarterback.
Well, they signed him to a 3-year deal last year. He's got 2 years left on it. Adam, where are we at in terms of maybe perhaps an extension? Yeah. What do you think they're going to do with him?
Well, there's no rush to extend the Honey Badger just yet. But what's interesting to me, Diana, here, is that you've got a situation where 1 year ago, when the Chiefs were remaking the defense, they really seemed to start at the safety position. In fact, obviously, they move on from Eric Berry, who was the spiritual leader of that team for a long time and was not a part of this team's championship season. And not only did they sign the Honey Badger, but they had a deal in place with Eric Berry. And they thought they were getting with Earl Thomas. And at the last moment, Earl Thomas changed his mind and went to go sign with the Baltimore Ravens. The Chiefs were this close to having Earl Thomas and Honey Badger as their two safeties and were greatly disappointed when he decided to go to Baltimore on a slightly different deal. So this defense, as good as it was late in the season for Steve Spagnuolo, it could have been even better with Earl Thomas, but that was the decision that they made. That was the decision they made. They were forced to go on without him, and it worked out well.
Yeah, well, the offensive side of the ball has plenty of weapons. Could you just imagine if they had that on the defensive side of the ball. Meantime, they've got a bunch of free agents coming up. I think they have around 20, 24. Adam, I'll have you catch your breath real quick there. But Jeremy, you know, in terms of Sammy Watkins, how do you see this playing out?
So here's what's interesting, Diana. He's not going to take a pay cut. He's got a $14 million salary, $21 million cap hit. They want to keep him, but they don't want him on that number, nope. Especially when he's not the number one. But from what I'm hearing, this is not going to be a pay cut situation. And that's why he said the other day, hey, look, maybe I'll sit out the year. Because he has really two options. He can either say, play me on this number, or set me free as a free agent. Of course, they can always extend him too, but if he was a free agent, he would have a huge market right now in this receiver climate. So he's in a good position.
In terms of what he can do, in terms of his production, if you're Andy Reid, are you thinking, I got to get Sammy Watkins back on this team, or do you think he's the type of player that they can walk away from?
Well, those are all the decisions they have to make. The tough thing about going to the Super Bowl, you're that much further behind the rest of the football league. So those are things they'll talk about. They've got a young core, and they've got plenty of weapons. But he was a big part. I mean, he was one of those explosive plays that really changed the tide in that game in the last 7 minutes. So he's definitely a guy that they're going to talk about. But that number is a big number when you're trying to piece, you know, all those guys back there. They got Chris Jones they got to do, Travis Kelce. I mean, they got some guys they got to get back, that, and you can't have them all, and they know that.
Yeah, and they certainly have a lot of decisions to make. Meantime, you know, you know they're still working behind the scenes, even though they're celebrating out there. There's someone there in the building starting to think about free agency, thinking about the draft, knowing that they got to put together a team and maybe perhaps make it a back-to-back situation, something we haven't seen in 15 years since the New England Patriots did it. You know, Travis Kelce feels like he's got all this pressure on him. And he was asked recently about just the nerves headed into the speech, what we can expect. And he said, you know, man, I don't know. I'm more nervous about this than I was the game. The game was football. At the end of the day, the game was a game, right? So this speech, to even try, everyone's going to put it up against my brother's speech. Like, I'm actually competing against him. It doesn't matter what I say. So it's either I try to go all out and top what my brother did, or I don't try to do it at all, and I throw the white flag in the air. I feel like that's a lot of overthinking right there for a parade speech, you know? And we know what he's talking about in terms of what his brother Jason Kelce did with all the hungry dogs run faster. And he certainly was the star of the show on Broad Street. Who can really, really forget that? But, I mean, what do you do here? What would you do?
I think he throws in the flag. I think that's a tough act to follow, that uniform or that costume and that speech. You might just want to revel in the excitement of it all.
Yeah, you may just take the L on this.
And yeah.
Just keep drinking out of Lombardi. If he's doing that, I'm
yes,
good.
That's what he's doing. Obviously, he's a big hockey fan, just doing the good old hockey way to celebrate the Stanley Cup. So I want to get back to Schefter. Adam, I heard on your podcast today, Am I Right In? You had offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy on. I didn't actually get all the way through it, so I want to know, what were some other good takeaways, some points that he made that were really memorable?
Well, I hope that wasn't because of boredom, Diana, but I will say this, that basically Patrick Mahomes' dislocated kneecap at one point in the season turned out to be one of the pivotal moments in the Chiefs' season, and the Chiefs' offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy, said on that podcast that he believes that that moment helped propel this team to the Super Bowl title.
We have a tremendous quarterback in Pat Mahomes. I think at times our players can get a little complacent because he always finds a way to make things happen. But when he got hurt, our guys, it kind of changed the dynamics of our team. And when Matt Moore came in, our guys rallied around him. And it was a huge moment in the season. At the time, you didn't realize it, but it was a huge moment because the growth process took off. The maturity levels, I mean, it just rose to a new level because they told him, we got your back. You just go out there and play. And from that point on, you know, guys started realizing that the challenges are going to be tougher and they're going to get tougher. But they found a way to make things happen when things wasn't quite perfect.
And there you go. That's a situation essentially where he felt like without that moment, it forced the Chiefs players to elevate their game because they were relying so much on Patrick Mahomes. They knew that he had their back at all times. And when he wasn't there to lean on, they had to grow up, change their game. And Eric Bieniemy, the Chiefs offensive coordinator, believes that that played a pivotal role in propelling this team forward to winning the Super Bowl title that it eventually did, Diana.
It's unbelievable to think in a moment that we all watch thinking, perhaps this could be, you know, a major issue for Kansas City, for them to be productive and to win games without Patrick Mahomes, the best player in the league. Yet it wound up being the biggest growth moment to get them to this point. It's exceptional. And to hear Eric Bieniemy in all these interviews since the Super Bowl, because we don't hear from him that much. I mean, weekly we do if you're in the local media, but you don't. And I find him to be so intelligent and interesting and insightful. Just in terms of what you know from around the league and the respect that he's gotten from calling this offense, what do you hear?
Well, this is a crowning moment this season for Eric Bieniemy. He's gone through 7 head coaching interviews in 2 years, and I got a chance to speak with him recently. He doesn't want to talk about that, but he wanted to talk about how even last year when they lost to New England, he told those guys in the locker room, savor this moment. How you feel right now? You feel crummy? We're going to translate that to next year. And we're going to build some perseverance, and they're going to get through it. And so he tried to set a tone. He went through this with Andy Reid. He knows he's in a great spot. And he told me, look, I have the most coachable quarterback in the league in Patrick Mahomes. He said he can get into his ASS and everything is still good. And he won't take it personally. He'll say, yes, sir, no, sir. So, and it was funny. I talked to his agent, Brian Levy, who told me that next year when he goes in those interviews, he's going to have a fat ring they're going to have to look at.
Oh, I love that. And it's true. And it has to change the market for him. You have to figure at this point, I mean, what else can he do at this point to get the attention that he can do this? And, you know, I look forward to seeing where he winds up landing, because I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of people calling. So, man, I hope you guys love looking at parade video. I do. It's very hard to host the show because I keep wanting to see this here.
I want to go there.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see what Travis Kelce is wearing. I want to see if he's going to try to beat out his brother. But they've come a long way this season. But after losing the Super Bowl, where do they go now? They appear to be built for success well into the future, but the last 5 NFC champions have yet to make it back to the conference championship game. Think about that. The Rams, remember, they burst onto the scene in 2018 with a 13-3 record and a Super Bowl showdown against the Pats. They went 9-7 this past season, placing 3rd in a tough NFC West division. The Eagles, they struggled. We saw them get bounced back-to-back the last 2 years. Then the Falcons left the Super Bowl 51 with that bad taste in their mouth. And since then, they've made the playoffs just once, losing to the eventual Super Bowl winning Eagles. And for the Panthers, they've also made just 1 playoff appearance since their Super Bowl run. And even worse, they finished last in the NFC South twice in that span. Man, this is nothing but bad news. And then the Seahawks have had maybe the best success of the group, making the playoff 4 times since their Super Bowl appearance in 2014. But like the others, they have yet to advance past the divisional round. So I really think we can say the moral of the story is it is so hard to get back after you've had so much success after 1 season. So, Coach, staying with this negative attitude that we have here, you are somebody who has coached in three Super Bowls. You've lost three. You won one, right?
No.
Shoot. Ofer. Sorry, Coach.
I've got rope burn to prove it. When you're on the losing side, that rope comes up pretty fast.
Yeah. Well, you're our champ here. Thanks, yeah. Jeremy. That being said, though, so you hear this. What is it about the next season that makes it so difficult to get back there?
Well, I think it's tough on either side. I mean, being able to repeat like what Kansas City's going to be facing. But, especially in the NFC, you look at that, and really since Seattle, people have really struggled. There's not been a dominant team in the NFC, in my opinion, a little bit like there has been in the AFC, just like what the Patriots have done, over the last decade. So there is a little bit of a popcorn effect to the NFC. Last year it was the Rams. This year, same division. It's the 49ers. So there really isn't that dominant team in the NFC, so it makes it that much harder.
Yep.
And mentally it's tough. I mean, the season's shorter all of a sudden. You're a month behind everybody in all your decision-making and everything you do. That hangover takes a while to get rid of.
Yeah, and I think sometimes that we overlook it, and our fans hear it and they think that's just a bunch of baloney, but it's really it's a real thing when you talk to coaches and players about what that's like the next season after either coming off a win or a loss, depending.
Exactly.
So the losing team here, Adam, there's some coaching staff updates actually already. What do we know and what could possibly be happening?
Both sides of the ball, Diana. On the defensive side of the ball, the 49ers are prepared to lose Joe Woods to the Cleveland Browns. Joe Woods has been their defensive backs coach. He's poised to become the Cleveland Browns defensive coordinator. That's something the 49ers have expected for a few weeks now. No surprise there. And on the offensive side of the football, their passing game coordinator, Mike LaFleur, the brother of the Green Bay Packers head coach Matt LaFleur, he had been working on an expiring contract. But during the postseason, he signed a contract extension with the team. And so the 49ers really will be retaining their offensive staff. They'll lose Joe Woods from the defensive staff, and we'll see what direction they decide to go to replace him. But the losses should be minimal considering that they were the NFC champ and advanced to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, for sure. Adam, thanks so much for that. Jeremy, anything else that you're hearing coming out of San Francisco in terms of this coaching staff? Any other changes that you think they're going to make?
Yeah, so like Adam alluded to, most of the staff is going to stay in place. The only wild card is I hear Joe Woods, he might try to bring one guy with him, maybe Chris Kiffin, who's their pass rush specialist. But I see Seahawks light a little bit as far as sustainability. I mean, this is a really good roster. Most of the front seven coming back. A few defensive pieces they have to re-sign. But, you have Kyle Shanahan, who's really considered the best play caller in the entire league when you talk to people around other teams. And they just I think they need an outside receiver, like a true number one. Other than that, I like this team a lot.
And consistency is so important for teams to continue building and continue working on what the ultimate goal is going to be. You've been on teams before that have had to make changes every season. How difficult is it when you have to make those changes compared to when you can stick with the guys you got?
Well, I think, continuity really helps a lot. And every year in the National Football League, why it's so hard to carry on success, is you develop different personality. It could be on your coaching staff, it could be in your locker room, on offense or defense. It just doesn't stay the same anymore with the free agency and how competitive it is. So, how fast you can reestablish that, and the fewer changes you can make, the better off you are.
Yeah, change is not good in these situations.
Especially in the NFC West.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That's right, the XFL kicks things off on Saturday with two games. First, Seattle and D.C. at 2 o'clock Eastern on ABC, followed by L.A. and Houston at 5 o'clock Eastern. So if you miss football, lucky for you, because the new league is getting started, and we now welcome in Oliver Luck, the CEO and commissioner of the XFL. And, we know that this league is all about quality football for the love of the game. What do you love about this league?
Well, I love the fact that a new league is being created in the unbelievable entrepreneurial spirit that permeates this country. Vince McMahon, of course, our founder and our visionary, he's put up the resources. He's allowed me to go out and hire some great head coaches to sign some really good football players. We're playing in great stadiums. What I love most about it, you can come to a game with a ticket, $20. $20 to sit in the lower bowl at MetLife or at CenturyLink Field out in Seattle, any of our great venues. So it's going to be fun, up-tempo football. Who can be upset about having more football at a time when there really isn't any live football?
Yeah, and not only is there not a time for live football right now, but it's just so expensive to go to any sporting event on any level. So to hear that it's that cheap to just get your family together and just go head out and watch good football with some great players out there. One of the biggest questions I think people want to know is how does this work in terms of the differences and the similarities to the NFL? What's been your response to that?
So we basically took what is already a great game, professional football, and we've added a couple of innovations that we think make it just a little bit better. So the game itself will very closely resemble what you see in the NFL. It's 11 on 11, four down, same size field, there's kickoffs, et cetera. But we do have a few twists. For example, and I know you like this one as well, you score a touchdown, you get 6 points. Great, that's traditional, we all get that. But in our league, you have an option to go for one, to go for two, or to go for three. They're all plays from scrimmage, no kicking in terms of the extra points. That's all strategy, Diana, right? That's all strategy. And what do we as fans like to do? Like to second guess a coach and the decision a coach makes. So we've added some twists within our game to make it that fast-paced, up-tempo game that fans tell us they want to see.
I'm with you on that. That is one of my favorite changes to this. Is there another rule that when fans immediately turn the game on, that may be a little jarring at first that you can think of?
Well, I think the only thing that people will see as they begin to watch, aside from the kickoff, which is different.
Yes,
the
kickoff
we think it's safer, but we think we'll get a lot of kickoff returns, and fans tell us they like kickoff returns. That's one of the most exciting plays in football. But the most consequential change we made is the 25-second play clock. Mm-hmm. 40 seconds in the National Football League, 25 seconds in our league. Our teams are going to have to play fast. But we've given them some technology to help them play fast. For example, the coach calling the offensive plays is not just communicating with the quarterback who has an earpiece in his helmet. He's communicating with the entire skilled players offensively that are on the field. Mm-hmm. So that should help us, and we've tested this in training camp and our mini camps. That should help us play good competitive football, but with a good flow to it.
Yeah, and a lot of communication, which I feel like could be a good thing and a bad thing depending on how they're going to manage it, which I'm interested to see how this will work, if it's even worth having all that communication. But again, it could just add to it. It's almost like playing Madden, really, for the head coaches.
Well,
at this point.
The point is that the communication is not shut off when the ball is snapped.
Yeah, which is incredible.
A smart head coach can continue to give advice, but you have to work that out with your quarterback and with everybody else.
It's like being in TV and having a producer in your ear. Just tell me everything to do. That's all I am. I'm just a robot. People are all interested, I think, in some of the names of the players and the coaches. Let's start with the players. Is there one or two guys that people that are going to be watching this can be like, oh, I know him?
Well, I think people will see our quarterbacks and say, oh, I know that guy. Where has he been, right? Yep. So Cardale Jones, great Ohio State quarterback, took his team to a national championship in an unbelievable postseason college run 5-6 years ago. He's the quarterback in D.C. He's a very good player, right? Let's see if he can recapture that magic. He's bounced around some NFL teams. Matt McGloin.
Yeah.
I watched Matt when he was a Raider, and they knocked off the team that I usually root for, the Colts. 1 year out in Oakland Alameda Coliseum. So he's a good quarterback, throwing the ball very well. We've got some receivers that I think are really strong. Yeah. Jazz Ferguson, former LSU player. He's up with Bob Stoops Bob Stoops and Hal Mumme up in Dallas. And, of course, Hal's going to throw the ball. So, Jazz might catch 40 passes this year. And then, of course, you got a guy like Sammy Coates in Houston, receiver, Auburn player, third-round draft choice. There's some really talented players that, for whatever reason, haven't found a home in the NFL that are playing in our league.
Landry Jones is another player, a big name player.
Exactly.
Somebody that was just in the NFL. I know he's dealing with a little bit of a knee injury, but when could we maybe perhaps expect to see him back in action? Because I think a lot of fans want to see what he can do.
Sure, and he's reuniting with his former college coach, Bob Stoops. So we're expecting Landry to be back for week two. We think he'll miss week one. They have two very capable quarterbacks outside of Landry, Eric Dungy and Philip Nelson. So that one of those two will start the game, I think, week one this week. And then we expect Landry back week two.
Yeah, well, I feel really lucky that I get to be part of the sidelines starting this Saturday at 2 o'clock. And you guys have the sideline reporters doing things that fans have never seen before in terms of access. I can speak to it, but no one wants to hear me. What's one thing you're looking forward to from the sideline reporters in terms of bringing the fan really inside the game?
Well, we're giving you unprecedented access, right, to
no rules
and to coaches on the sidelines. So, guy scores a touchdown or makes an unbelievable block. As soon as he comes off the field, you can talk to him and ask him about the play. And I think that's awesome because people want to they want to get inside a player's head. What was he thinking as that was going on? Was there any nervousness there? How did that all play out? So we're providing access for sidelines. We're providing access for viewers conversations going on amongst the referees, for example, or amongst the coach and the quarterback. There's all kinds of access that we want to we want to provide to our viewers to make sure that they can really get as close to the players and as close to the coaches as possible.
Yeah, well, I promise you I won't be wearing heels on the sideline. I'll be wearing sneakers because it sounds like you'd be working me. Every time, you know, you say your name, of course, we think about your wonderful son who's enjoying retirement. He's enjoying being a new father. He just had a baby 3 months ago. And you've been pretty consistent about where Andrew is, and which is he's really happy being retired. I think, though, a lot of people want to know what it was like for you the night the news got out that Andrew was going to be retiring. Where were you, and what was going through your mind?
My wife and I were in Indianapolis. We have a home there still and try to get back there as often as we can on the weekend. So it was the night of a preseason game. My wife and I both knew that Andrew had been, you know, contemplating retirement. We didn't quite know the exact timing of that, so we literally... You know, we're in Indy and we live downtown. We have a condo downtown. So we hightailed it over to Lucas Oil Field and true story, got into the building and into the press conference just as it was over.
Oh, you missed it?
We missed it. So, you know, all we could do was sort of give him a hug and, you know, and of course we supported them 100%. I admire any player, who is able to go out on his terms. Luke Kuechly just did this a couple, 3 weeks ago. Andrew did it and many others over the years have done it. But a guy who says, you know, sure, I could play a few more years, but, you know, for whatever reason, the joy of the game has kind of got sucked out of me, and I'm going to step down. It's, as you know, a very tough game to play.
I didn't play it, but I can agree that it looks tough out there. But I can tell you that the league truly, truly misses Andrew Luck, and I certainly do as a reporter. But thank you so much. I'm so excited to get to work with you. So this Saturday on ABC, you can check out the first XFL kickoff weekend. Make sure you guys tune in. Thank you so much for joining us. Here we got the top 10 here, and the draft order is set. So the 10 teams are in prime position to find their franchise player. The Bengals, the Skins, the Lions, Giants, Dolphins, they round out the top 5, while the Chargers, Panthers, Cardinals, Jags, and Browns will be waiting in the wings after that. So if your team is picking the top 10, there is hope. In 2017, the Chiefs picked Patrick Mahomes with the 10th pick, the second quarterback off the board behind Mitchell Trubisky after winning the NFL and the Super Bowl MVP. I think they're pretty happy with that. Yep. Sorry, Bears. Then in 2018, the Colts found an anchor for their offensive line in Quentin Nelson. That season, Indy ripped off 10 wins and advanced to the divisional round, beating Deshaun Watson and the Texans along the way. And how about last season? Nick Bosa, unbelievable, went to the 49ers with the second overall pick. The Niners registered 48 sacks, forced 21 fumbles, tied for their most in franchise history. And then, of course, an appearance in Super Bowl 54 and quite a remarkable season he had. So we look at these teams that may not need a couple pieces to get better, but what team do you think is one player away from being a contender next year, Jeremy?
I'm going to go Lions because you look at these teams that all need help. Matthew Stafford was probably playing at an MVP-type level early in the year. They looked like a playoff team to me until it all fell apart. So they have one of the best receiving tandems in the league. They've got good tight end play, offensive line decent. I mean, they probably need one more splash player on each side of the ball. But I like the Lions in contention. You're going to think I'm crazy for this one.
Okay.
Redskins. I like the Redskins because if we're talking one player away, they're getting Chase Young. So that's the guy. They're going to be able to get stops on third down now with Young and those Alabama guys and Kerrigan and all those guys.
I guess I'm looking at it as if we're playing the game of the question I asked gave you. That makes a lot of sense, but there's a lot more issues than just their finding a player on defense. But, Coach, what about you? What team is perhaps just one player away from going from being good to great?
You know, looking at these top 10 teams that have the top 10 picks, I'm going to go with the Chargers because I think they've got the most complete roster. Another reason is they've played in arguably the worst home field stadium in the league all this last 2 years. So I think getting into the new stadium, having a real home for a complete season, you know, if they can get a player, you know, like they've got Joey Bosa, if they can get a player anywhere near as good as Nick Bosa, I think that really helps their football team and an already talented roster.
So yesterday, you know, we were talking about mock drafts, and it seemed pretty clear that our guys all think that Joe Burrow is going to Cincinnati, no questions asked. But I want to bring in our Adam Schefter. Adam, are you hearing about any potential moves that include Cincy and Joe Burrow?
Well, there was a moment during the Super Bowl week, Diana, where a couple of NFL owners were standing together and pondering the chances that Cincinnati would trade out of the spot. One of those owners, I would say, would be a team that would consider a move up potentially. And the other owner told him, no chance, Cincinnati not trading. Now, look, any pick is always open for business. There's always a price. I get it. But I'm just telling you, that going into the offseason, the Bengals don't have any plans to move on from that pick. They don't have any plans to consider other offers. And the pick right now would be Joe Burrow, the quarterback, who has some ties to the Cincinnati area. His girlfriend is from the Cincinnati area. I think that's the players the Bengals are zeroed in on. And another team can always approach him, always make an offer. You always listen. I got it. I'm just telling you that when that card is turned in to Roger Goodell in Las Vegas, I expect that pick to be Joe Burrow to the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, I think this is one of those years where it just seems pretty clear and it makes sense. Two teams made the playoffs after picking in the top 10 last year, and it was the 49ers and the Bills in almost a third, and that being the Steelers. Meantime, guys, Lamar Jackson took the lead by storm, rushing for a quarterback record of 1,206 yards and a unanimous MVP award at just 23 years old, right? So then we had Jameis Winston. He led all passers with 5,109 yards, placing eighth on the all-time single-season list. He'll need at least 300 more yards next season to reach that guy we saw before, Peyton Manning's record. And then Christian McCaffrey led the league in scrimmage yards last year, but more impressively became the third to ever record 1,000 yards rushing and receiving. And what a benchmark for Saints Michael Thomas. He set the last season record with an NFL record of 149 receptions. I guess there's motivation to become the first to catch 150 passes, perhaps. And, of course, paying our respects to the defensive side of the ball, we got to do that. Shaquille Barrett had an NFL best 19 and a half sacks last season. If he can reach 20, he'd be the first to do it since Aaron Donald did it back in 2018. We want to bring Adam Schefter in here to talk about Michael Thomas. Adam, do you think he can continue the success that he's having if Drew Brees was not to return to New Orleans?
Well, listen, Michael Thomas is going to put up great numbers no matter who the quarterback is, but that is the central storyline in New Orleans in the next few weeks here, is who's going to be playing quarterback, because the Saints don't have a quarterback under contract as they head into the new league year. Drew Brees is a free agent and is undecided about whether he'll continue playing. Taysom Hill is a free agent. Teddy Bridgewater is a free agent. And Sean Payton has made clear the fact that if Drew Brees comes back, then there wouldn't be room for Teddy Bridgewater. So I think Bridgewater waits to see what Drew Brees does initially. We know how much they love Taysom Hill. They consider him a major part of their future moving forward. But that quarterback position in general in New Orleans is unsettled and will remain so until Drew Brees communicates his intentions to Sean Payton here sometime in the next couple of weeks, Diana.
Yeah, and Adam, I talked to Drew Brees at the Pro Bowl about where he's at in terms of his mindset. And he said, you know, I just want to take this time. I want to think about this. I want to go over this with my family. And in terms of where I want to go, if I decide I don't want to, or if I want to return, he pretty much made it clear he doesn't want to play anywhere else but New Orleans. It's really just basically retirement or New Orleans. So looking at the situation at the quarterback spot there, are you hearing anything from the Saints side of this, right, or even perhaps from Drew Brees' camp about how this is going to work?
Well, I ran into a Saints person at the Super Bowl, and they said, keep in mind, Taysom Hill, Drew Brees are very close friends. So Brees has an investment in Hill's future. So their likely scenario was Brees comes back for 1 year, he plays, but then he helps pass the torch to Taysom for 2021, and then Teddy Bridgewater would go be a free agent, who I think is going to have a good market on his own, by the way. Yeah. But everybody is still at that same time respecting Brees' process. He's got a couple weeks here leading up to late February in the combine. He can make his decision anytime between now and mid-March. But that was the scenario they threw out to me. That's what they believe will happen.
It's just so hard for me to imagine Drew Brees hanging up. He takes such great care of his body. He's so competitive.
He's still good.
But he's got children and a family that I know he wants to spend time and not miss those years of them growing up. Coach, for you look at the Saints situation. You're Sean Payton. How are you feeling right now in February, not knowing what you're doing?
Well, I know Sean wants to get Drew back, and I'm sure, but Sean's going to do right by Drew in the sense he's going to give him space. And a lot of times after a long, grueling, and those seasons are long and grueling, regardless how far you go into the playoffs, and they've been in the playoffs a lot. So, you know, it's a long season. He's going to step back, and he's going to be given space by all the decision makers. And I see in probably 3 or 4 weeks that there's a decision, and I see Drew coming back.
Yeah, I feel like they wound up settling this. But, hey, they got Taysom Hill, and we saw what he can do, and he certainly can run a Sean Payton offense. Back here on NFL Live, downtown Kansas City. The flag waving is just the theme today as these guys are just getting warmed up and ready to go. No school today. Obviously, no one's going to work. I think everyone's just cool with that. The players, the buses, they just arrived. So you're going to start seeing these guys come on out in just a few. Let's take a listen, actually, to what's going on here.
When I closed that game as the seconds ticked down, I said this thinking of all of you, all of you watching, all of you here, all of you on that parade route today, because I said the Chiefs kingdom has firmly planted its flag on top of football's highest summit. The Kansas City Chiefs are champions of Super Bowl 54.
All right, well, they're getting ready as they're all trying to find their seats and get settled in as we await for the players to come in. And, you know, I think really, as much as we're celebrating what they're doing, the big question mark is Patrick Mahomes and what they're going to do. And, you know, we brought Adam Schefter in earlier to talk about, what, you know, what he's hearing, you know, just taking the pulse around the league as well. And it's his answer to it was, here's a blank check, essentially. That's what Kansas City should be doing. Jeremy, you talked to some GMs as well and even some agents to get a vibe about what you think Patrick Mahomes' worth is. And right. What are you feeling?
Well, it's pretty much close to a blank check, but they're still looking at it as, okay, you're going to be the highest paid player. Let's make that happen, but within a threshold. So if Russell Wilson makes $35 million a year, he's the highest paid. They're estimating Mahomes will be somewhere between $37 and $40 million a year, even after the Super Bowl, because it's still sort of slotted, right? He's not going to go from like $35 million to $50. It's just not really going to happen.
Yeah.
That's not the way the NFL works. If he waited a year and held out and did all this fun stuff, then you're looking at, you know, he could do that. But the Chiefs could have incentive to get something done now. They can beat the new CBA. Maybe if they wait, it could be even 7 to 10% higher based on the market. So all sides are probably best off getting something done.
John, how does this work? So now Kansas City, they're going to come off this run here, the celebration. When do they start talking? How do you think this would work?
Well, I think they're probably already talking. But how serious it is, I don't really think it's that serious. And really kind of what I know about Patrick, and I know about his character and whatnot, I don't think it's, you know, that pivotal that it happens fast either. I don't think it's going to be a distraction. You know, is he worth every penny? Yes. Could it be a blank check, like Adam said? I mean, I would do it. But just the way the NFL business works, I don't see a real hurry for this right now. That's just me. I'm thinking 6 to 8 months is if anything really actually starts to seriously happen.
Right, because he's still only 3 years in. He's got the fifth-year option that they'll put on him just as a placeholder, so then he would be under contract 2 years. Most teams like to wait 1 year before doing a deal. This is a different animal, though, but you're right. Time is on their side.
I lock that thing up. All right, so we've been waiting and waiting and waiting all show long to start hearing from the Kansas City Chiefs players. So Travis Kelce sounded very nervous about what he was going to talk about during his speech, because he's got the competition of his brother, of course, from 2 years ago when he gave that phenomenal speech on Broad Street in Philly. So, and the Kansas City Chiefs are getting ready to take stage for the speeches and the celebration. Maybe a little TMI, guys, but when the Royals had their parade just a few years ago, the city ordered around 200 porta potties. They ordered 700 for today's celebration. That's how many people they expect.
Probably not enough.
Yeah, probably not enough at all.
So, people.
Especially knowing how much people love to have a good time down there. And we're to bring that to you soon as the players step up and start giving their speeches. But meantime, guys, earlier today, the Browns introduced new general manager Andrew Berry. The 32-year-old worked in Cleveland's front office from 16 to 18, spent this past season as the vice president of personnel with the Eagles. Here's Berry on his plans for success in Cleveland.
You see, I believe success in the NFL comes from good people. And good people come from all walks of life. And it's for that reason that we're going to be very deliberate in pushing diversity across football operations, because it leads to success. And I know that I've been the benefactor of people looking beyond my age and my race throughout every phase of my career. But the thing is, diversity in the NFL, it transcends race, age, gender. Diversity of experience and diversity of thought are just as important. I want to be clear that everyone in the organization, starting with the front office, our coaching staff, our support staff, and our players, will focus with immediate urgency on the things within their role that drive toward winning. That's the standard by which we're all judged and the standard by which we're all held accountable. And I look forward to working through that challenge on a daily basis beginning today.
Certainly sounds like an impressive 32-year-old brand-new GM. But meantime, he's going to have to handle this guy. That's Odell Beckham Jr., who had a tough 2019 season, a career-low 4.6 receptions per game in his first year with Cleveland. He battled through a hip injury that required surgery after the season, too, something he spoke about in an interview with Complex Magazine on Monday. And here's what he had to say about it. I thought these quotes were interesting. He said, "I think myself as well had a slice of humble pie." He was referencing Baker Mayfield, who had a little bit of a slice of humble pie, he admitted. "I couldn't really say I was hurt. I didn't want to make it seem like I'm having an excuse, but I really couldn't do what I wanted. So I don't think there's really changing anybody, but I definitely think you'll see a more focused, improved version of myself." So it's clear that Odell Beckham Jr. was not healthy at all during this season. He didn't want to use that as a crutch to rely on. But Adam, let's go to you out here. What's the latest on Odell's injury? Is there an actual timetable yet for when he'll be back working out?
Look, Dana, there's no real reason to rush this along. They're going to be very careful with him. They know that he hurt it last summer, and he pushed through it, and he played when perhaps maybe he shouldn't have at certain times. And so they'll take it along slowly. There's no reason to rush him back out there. And already Andrew Berry has met with Odell Beckham Jr. He's met with Kareem Hunt. He's met with some of the key figures that have had some off-the-field questions to basically discuss where their futures are headed. And I think Andrew Berry made it very clear to both players that he intends for each of them to be a part of the future there moving forward. And as we talked about with that surgery, with that injury, they'll be very careful with him. They want him healthy in September. It's not as important to have him healthy in July.
Yeah, that's a good point. Adam, we're going to get back to you because we've got a Super Bowl story that I'm dying to hear about. And we got some photos to prove it, I heard. So we'll get back to you in a minute there. But back here talking about Odell, Jeremy, you know, he had a lot to say in those quotes. And, you know, you got to wonder, do you really believe when he says that he's not trying to fix anybody? Do you think he's at a point in his career where he's just so focused on what he's doing? Or do you think he's kind of frustrated with the situation that's been around him?
So I think he's a little frustrated. I think it's all the above. But the injury was a real issue that, from what I'm told, he had a great attitude pretty much all year. As far as the Browns' problems last year, he was like number 12 on the problems list, okay? They struggled, you know, the offensive line. I mean, the pressure really is on Baker Mayfield more than it is Odell Beckham, because if he has another bad year, they have to do some replacing. But from all that I've heard, they had plans to keep Odell despite the way the year went. You know, they didn't want to trade him because they can't get the same value that they took away a year ago just to get him.
Yeah.
And so he's in the plans right now, and they believe that he can be the explosive player they remembered when they made that move for him.
All right, I'm giving you the keys to the Cleveland Browns front office here, Coach. I'm saying, it's now your job to figure out how to get the most out of Odell Beckham Jr. What's the first conversation you're having with him as the new GM of Cleveland? What do you want him to know?
Well, number one is he's part of a team. You know, it's not just about him. And when you have a selfless attitude, a selfish mindset, or selfless mindset, I think you accomplish so much more. And some of the things I've seen, whether it was with the Giants or even with Cleveland a year ago, with just some of the issues, you know, a lot more about, you know, the dependability and the accountability of doing your job every day and being consistent with
it.
Some of the other things can be very big distractions, and that doesn't help in a team setting.
Yeah, and do you guys remember in the offseason, in the summer, and they did a bunch of interviews, which I have no issue with, Odell Beckham Jr., Baker Mayfield. They talked to a bunch of our reporters, too, just about the excitement going into the season, and it was pretty clear that there was a lot of pressure on them to be really successful this season. And I think based on their roster, people thought that they could. So now knowing what they've done or didn't do, do you think that there's going to be more pressure on them this year? Or do you think actually more pressure was on them last season?
Well, clearly there's no pressure on the Browns coaches, the GM. They have infinite job security, right? Nobody ever gets fired there. It's one of those situations where they thought that 2020 would be the big jump, that they would be a better team then, that the roster will be pretty much complete, time to make a run. And so the pressure's pretty much on everybody. But I think with a full offseason, even though Odell's hurt, he can communicate with Baker Mayfield. Jarvis Landry was thinking he might need surgery. Now he doesn't. So he can get some workouts in with Baker, get the timing right for that offense. And I think the defense on the other side will be pretty good. And he'll have Myles Garrett back, which helps a great deal.
No doubt.
I talked to Jarvis Landry at the Pro Bowl about their season specifically, and his perspective was really good. He's like, I think it was great that we didn't perform. He said, yeah, of course we wanted to be in a position that the Chiefs are in. But we did learn a lot about each other. And so maybe it's just going to take another year with these guys and these big personalities, which I felt like we talked about to nauseam last year. And it actually, I do think, became a real thing with too many guys going out there and wanting the ball and becoming an issue. But that being said, the pressure conversation here, do you think the pressure's actually off now because they didn't have such a good year?
I don't know that it could have been any higher than it was a
year.
Yeah,
it really was.
I will
was.
Say that.
It was.
So I think anything from that is probably a little bit less than it was a year ago. But, you know, one thing I've always said about pressure, there's two types of pressure, those you feel and those you apply. And as long as you can take your day-to-day work ethic and workload into applying pressure, that means getting better, take care of you, get stronger, get faster, be better conditioned. And then now you don't have these little nicks and nag, you know, things that bother you during the season, and you can focus on doing your job. I think that's what they've been lacking. And there wasn't enough of that with the Cleveland Browns football team a year ago.
Yeah, well, we know that Odell Beckham Jr. wound up in Cleveland through that gigantic trade, which I think it took us all about a good 5 minutes to be like, there's no way that this really happened. Well, it did, as we know. So if last year was any indication that we're in for a wild offseason, who knows what could happen this season? The Eagles, guys, remember, they traded with the Bucs to get back their former star receiver, DeSean Jackson. D-Jax was able to suit up for 3 games this past season, though. Just not enough, but they certainly needed him when he was out there. And this feels like forever ago, but the Raiders also made a move for a receiver. Remember Antonio Brown? What a long offseason that was. And Brown didn't even make it to the regular season game on Monday Night Football. He got cut right before. And then D4 was traded this past offseason. The Niners acquired the pass rusher from the Chiefs for an exchange for a second round pick. And then we saw Super Bowl winning quarterback Joe Flacco traded to the Denver Broncos. It didn't pan out for both parties, and the teams appear to be in a great spot with Drew Lock. Guys, things are getting going. Oh, there she is. You see the excitement. The front office, it seems, is up on stage right now, hoisting the Lombardi Trophy as the speeches are going to begin. Let's take a listen in now.
All right, Chiefs Kingdom. How does it feel to be world champions? It's amazing to see all of Kansas City here this afternoon. That parade is something I will never forget. To share that joy together was one of the highlights of my life. At our first meeting as a team at training camp in St. Joe this year, I talked to the team about our goals. It started with going back to the AFC Championship game and winning that trophy that has my dad's name on it. And we brought it home. After that, I told them that we were going to Miami and we were going to win another Lombardi Trophy and bring it back to Kansas City. And guess what, Chiefs Kingdom? We brought it home. All year long, people spoke of the Chiefs as a team of destiny. 50 years after our first Super Bowl win, the 60th anniversary of the founding of the American Football League, the 100th season of the NFL. While that may be true, what set this group apart is how they came together as a team. These men believed in each other, they had each other's back, and most of all, they played for each other. That's the definition of a championship team, and in the end, they did prove that they were a team of destiny. I'm so glad that we have so many of our greats from the Super Bowl IV team here with us today to celebrate. 50 years ago, after the Chiefs defeated the Vikings, 13 of those players had to attend the AFL All-Star Game and did not have an opportunity to ride in the parade. 9 of those men are still with us, and all of them were invited to ride in the parade today. We're excited to have them here with us and to celebrate this new group of champions. Let's give the Super Bowl IV team a round of applause. None of this is possible with an outstanding team of people coming together for a common goal. As I said during our trophy presentation Sunday, our family is blessed to work with such a great team of people led by Mark Donovan, Brett Veach, and Andy Reid. A lot of people believe this journey started 7 years ago with the hiring of Andy Reid, but it really started before that when Mark Donovan joined our organization. Mark has been the steady force that has helped make the Chiefs a model franchise in the National Football League. He was instrumental in bringing Andy Reid and in turn Brett Veach to Kansas City, and he has done a phenomenal job of preparing us for success. Let's give it up for Mark. Just as Mark has done an outstanding job on the business side, Brett Veach helped build a world championship team. He was the driving force in acquiring some of the big-time leaders and playmakers on our roster, guys like Anthony Hitchens, Damian Williams, Frank Clark, Tyrann Mathieu, oh, and some kid from East Texas named Patrick Mahomes. Let's give it up for Brett. The last part of the leadership team is the guy we call Big Red. Over the last 7 seasons, Andy Reid has made the Chiefs one of the best teams in football, and I can't say enough about him, both as a coach and, more importantly, as a person. He's a man of integrity, a tremendous teacher, a first ballot Hall of Fame coach, and after Sunday, Big Red is a world champion. Let's give it up for Andy Reid. And D, and D, and D, and D, and D, and D. Finally, and most importantly, I want to close about talking about the best part of our team, the Chiefs' kingdom. It's been a long journey, too long if you ask me, but sometimes when the journey is hard, the destination is that much sweeter. Chiefs Kingdom was there through it all, rain or shine, in the heat, in the snow, it didn't matter. You always had our backs. It was so special to see the incredible joy and excitement throughout the kingdom all season, especially in the weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. Once we got to Miami, the Sea of Red took over. Chiefs Kingdom turned Hard Rock Stadium into Arrowhead South. It was an incredible environment, and one that none of us will ever forget. So one time, right here, let's give it up for the Chiefs Kingdom. A few months before he passed away, my dad was asked to describe the best day of his life, and I want to read what he wrote. My best day was January 12th, 1970. The day after the Chiefs won Super Bowl IV. It specifically relates to the victory parade and celebration through the downtown area and on to Liberty Memorial in Kansas City. Thousands of fans had congregated to be part of the event. The Chiefs winning the game the day before was fun, but seeing the reactions of the fans was the icing on the cake for my best day. My dad loved the Chiefs Kingdom, and I'm honored that he shared his love with us. So Chiefs Kingdom, thank you for giving my dad and I some of the best days of our lives. We love you.
There had to be hope, the hope that lived in all of you, because Clark referenced it, Governor Parson referenced it, but somebody had to hold the rope and give us hope. At the end of 2012, we were at the bottom of the league. No AFC wins, 2-14. And our president said, hang in there. We're going to figure this out. And man, did we figure this out. He talked about preparing to win, and he said, we'll get this done. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome President of the Kansas City Chiefs, Mark Donovan.
How are we doing, Kingdom? All right, so let me first say thank you to our governor, to our mayor, to county executive, and especially the sports commission for their support all year long, but especially in making today a reality. Thank you for all the hard work, guys. I'd like to publicly, from this stage right now, recognize our chief staff. These men and women work 24/7, 365 days a year to deliver the best fan experience in sports. Thank you, guys. Our partners, many of you have been with us since the very beginning. Some of you joined us recently. Many of you joined us when we were 2-14 or 4-12. And in those days, you bought into a vision, and you helped us execute that vision. You guys are part of the family. Enjoy this. And when speaking of family, I want to take a second to just thank the Hunt family. Consistently, they're referred to as the best ownership group in sports. And I would tell you this, they're special people. Their commitment to the kingdom, their commitment to our fans, their commitment to this city is unmatched. And I want to speak on behalf of all of us when I say thank you for the opportunity for every player, coach, and executive, and every fan to live a dream. Because today we live a dream. Thank you. I'm going to end with this. To Andy, to Brett, to Clark, I love you guys. We've been through a lot together. And we were talking this week and the week before about everything we had to do to get ready for Super Bowl. And I reckon back to 2013 when Andy and I sat in our office and we said, If the four of us just do our jobs, we can have a lasting impact on this community. We can change lives and make Kansas City a better place to live. Well, for the four of us, fellas, we did it.
And that Chiefs president, Mark Donovan, thoughtful, celebratory, appreciative. We've also heard from Clark Hunt, the owner, as we await for the players and the coaches to take stage. But obviously just a joyous day there in Kansas City. John Fox, Jeremy Fowler, I'm Diane Rossini. Thanks so much for checking out NFL Live. We'll be back right here at 1:30 Eastern tomorrow.